T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. The Mark Cox Morning Show.
I want to compliment your show on how fair and level-headed everything you guys talk about.
Who is this guy? He's saying what we've been saying forever.
Maybe what we need from a conservative standpoint is
the Mark Cox Morning Show.
I respect that. We don't agree. Listen to both sides.
This,
let's get it on,
is the Mark Cox Morning Show. The Mark Cox Shortlist, brought to you by Eggers Heating and Air Conditioning. Call Eggers.com.
The notion that Bill Barr should resign is about the dumbest damn thing I have ever heard.
They're vicious, they shouldn't have brought impeachment.
James, in all due respect, is a political hack.
I have a document here that's a smoking gun.
I bill myself as the un-Trump.
We don't feel no ways tired. We've come too far from where we started.
Oh, that's an applause line.
Huh. The please clap.
Please,
that's an applause
clap
line. Thank you very much. Joe Biden trying to retool his campaign after the disasters that were Iowa and New Hampshire. What do you think his odds are? I don't know. Good Thursday morning to you.
It's morning.
Been interesting to watch the rapid decline. I have to think it's sort of a combination of things, right? Trump's been hitting him pretty hard. Rudy's been hitting him pretty hard. There have been questions about the Ukraine thing. It was the key. It was mentioned repeatedly in the impeachment. And then he bombed in these first two primaries. Not that people haven't lost Iowa and gone on to win the nomination. But Democrats seem to have lost faith in Joe Biden to some extent. It'll be interesting to see if the South saves him or not. So, of course, we'll be keeping an eye on that for you. And as those primaries roll on, Michael Bloomberg's out there fighting back, calling himself the un-Trump, if you heard that. And he's got an uphill battle to fight as well, because people keep going back and digging up old audio of what he's been saying over the years that he's suddenly not saying now. So I think people are on the left are a little suspicious of that. I mean, remember, Bloomberg served as a Republican when he was when he was a governor. So who will be the head of the Democratic ticket this year? That is the big question. And I heard more people yesterday talking about brokered convention. I don't know if that's ever going to happen or not. We're going to get to more on all of this for you. And we've got Congresswoman Ann Wagner coming up at about 7:37. So stay tuned for that. Several things we're going to talk about with the Congresswoman. First of all, the idea of paid family leave forced upon private businesses by the government is something that the president mentioned in his State of the Union address. Is that I don't know that I'm ever going to be convinced that that's a good idea. The government has already done it for federal employees without really asking the taxpayers, but now they want to force it down the throats of private businesses. It sounds to me like Ann has a version of that plan that she likes. We're going to let her come on here and explain it to us and kind of get you the details of what she's hoping to see happen with that. And she can give us an update on what else is going on in the House of Representatives. So all that's straight ahead here at about 7:37. Right now, though, let me get to my guest, please. Former Missouri Senator Jim Talent, our guest this morning, as usual on a Thursday morning. Jim, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm glad to hear that. Here we are watching complete exasperation and outrage in Washington over the Roger Stone case. And I've been anxious to talk about this all morning and really kind of what's at stake there. They're now calling for Bill Barr's resignation over all of this.
Well, you may have to talk about it with somebody else. I haven't read a lot about it. You know, from what I understand, from the little I have read, the conviction seemed to be pretty sound. Now, I haven't read a lot on the other side. And when you get something like the Mueller report, one of the problems with it is you create this tremendous sense, at least among part of the population, that there was skullduggery going on, even though Mueller concluded that there really wasn't. And so you get the potential for injustice that you otherwise wouldn't have. So I'm open to the idea that there's problems with this, but I've not read enough about it to know.
Yeah, you know, the bottom line is if you commit perjury, I understand that there needs to be a problem. If you're found guilty of perjury, lying to an FBI agent, there have to be consequences for that. But the what's out of whack here is that they were trying to sentence him to 8 or 9 years in prison for something that for drug deal. Oftentimes people that get convicted of drug dealing and sometimes more violent crimes don't go to jail for as long as they wanted to lock Roger Stone.
Yeah, the other problem with this is particularly when the federal government decides it's going to go after somebody. The disproportion in resources is so great that as an effective matter, people can't ever get to trial. Now, I think the Michael Flynn case, which I've read more about, I think may very well have been an example of that. I think Flynn probably had some pretty strong defenses to that charge, including whether he actually ever lied to anybody, because the notes of the FBI report that were done immediately afterwards said he hadn't. And yet he would have had to bankrupt himself and his family to go to trial. And evidently they were threatening to go after his son as well. So the problem is, of course, most of the protections for criminal defendants are at the trial stage, and you can't get to trial without ruining yourself and your family. So you just take whatever it is they're willing to hand out to you. That is a big problem, and it's hard to deal with short of just strengthening the oversight over federal prosecutors, particularly in politically really, in very political cases.
Right. Yeah. And then in this particular case, they recommended this higher sentence, like a minimum of 8 years to the judge. And they got overruled by the Department of Justice. And now the allegation is somehow the president stepped in and influenced the attorney general with a tweet that he sent out. The attorney general's office says, listen, this is just bad timing. We had no control over what the president tweeted. We also had no contact with his office about this case. We realized that what they were asking for seemed out of whack. I thought that Trey Gowdy framed this pretty well this morning. Go to cut 22, please.
The notion that Bill Barr should resign is about the dumbest damn thing I have ever heard. If a United States senator really believes that the head of the Department of Justice cannot weigh in on what a proportional sentence is. I mean, there are child pornographers who don't get 9 years, Martha. There are people who rob banks that don't get 9 years.
Yeah, it just seems, there just seems to be a vindictiveness about it. But, Jim, you know, the bigger issue here for me is that the Mueller report didn't reach the conclusion that some folks wanted it to, and they seem to see Roger Stone as some, if they could just get him convicted, well, they've got then something they can hang their hat on. And in this case, he was convicted, and then there seems to be just maybe an overzealousness to sentence him to more time than he deserves for the crimes he's accused of.
And that's the danger. Now, I have a lot of faith in Attorney General Barr. I think he's an institution guy, and I mean that in the good sense of the word. And I think to the extent that people want him to resign, it's because they're concerned that if the Justice Department operates according to its neutral rules, which are pretty good rules when they follow them, that it's not going to produce the result they want. And I also think it's really important that people don't let individuals get crushed under the wheels of a political crusade. So you're right. You have to be very careful about this. Now, this would be a good area for the president to think about, his tweeting patterns, which I think are very effective in a lot of ways. But yeah, the danger is that it looks like he's interfering with the process. I don't think it does affect Barr. I think the cabinet officers understand this kind of think it's kind of a deal. The president says what he wants, and they go and do their jobs. They don't take these tweets as if they were, you know, presidential decisions. But it gives rise to this kind of speculation.
Yeah, that's very true. And hopefully, this fear dies down, because apparently they've got Barr going up there to testify next week. So we'll see.
Well,
what happens.
Listen, Bill Barr can do fine in a testimony. I don't think he's sitting there shaking in his boots. I'd be careful if I was sitting on the other side of the dais from Barr before going after him. I think I'd want to make certain I had a very sound case before I went after him.
This
guy's strong.
Very true. You know, Jim, always enjoy having you on here when we discuss issues of national security and the like. Did you get a chance to, and I understand that it's only a suggestion when it's sent over there, but did you get a chance to look at all at some of the president's budget proposals? Because he seems to be making a serious run at trying to reduce the size of the federal government to some extent and impact this deficit that we face. He boosts military spending. He boosts veteran spending. But he starts to cut into some of these social programs, and none of them are apparently ever allowed to get smaller without a temper tantrum by the Democrats.
Yeah, or to be reformed. And this is the thing I used to talk to my Democratic friends, I had a lot of them on the other side of the aisle, which is that, look, we're not still in the 30s, okay? We're not fighting over whether we're going to have a strong social safety net. But can they, which, and they're supposed to be the progressive party, and I don't want to sound partisan here, but this is, I think, one of the issues in their party in the modern era. Can we look at the programs that we've passed to try and reform them so that they do what they're supposed to do? And very often you'll either save money with that, or effectively you will, because you'll get a much bigger bang for the buck. Now, one of the classic examples is the job training programs. And I think every impartial study, including the GAO, the General Accounting Office, that's been done, we have dozens of these programs, have said that they don't retrain anybody. So, okay, let's have retraining programs. What's the point? What does anybody gain from having retraining programs that don't train anybody, right? So that's the sort of thing that we need to do if we could get back to something approaching a normal appropriations process, okay? We would have a better chance of doing this, because this is what the appropriations committees are supposed to do. And they did used to do it. In other words, if something isn't working or needs to be changed, you could get some – you could get some impetus for that within the committee. But if your idea of appropriations is just to pass an enormous, what they call omnibus, half a trillion dollar bill at the end of the Congress, it's pretty hard to do that. So there are advantages to what's called the regular order or the process. Well, and I'd love to see us get back to that.
I don't know how you get there, because I went through and looked at some of these items where the president's gone, had people go in and look at, the EPA and some of these other things, and some laws that have been put into place with some fancy name that also tends to mimic other laws that are already in place that are funding the same thing. And when you try to eliminate some of these programs that overlap, they start screaming. The headlines are, President wants deep cuts in the social safety net.
Right.
And it ends the conversation.
Yeah, eliminate. Or it's really more consolidation. And I think you ask, how do you do that? Well, I think you begin by having some private discussions with people on both sides of the aisle and saying, look, we all understand that if there's something either side of us can do, either one of us can do, that's actually could affect an election, that there's some real political consequences to it, we're probably going to do that. But there's a whole range of issues where, we can get maybe a headline in the 24-hour news cycle, which is now like 24 minutes. But it's not going to change anything. And all it does is hurt interests that we both agree are important. So can we at least just sort of can we wall off the politically driven sort of statements and positions to things that actually matter politically? Can we just begin with that and then otherwise actually try to govern? And I think if you can do that and then take some small steps, which might involve a little risk, and see how the other side responds, see if they'll respond with some small steps. You might ask Ann Wagner about that. I know she'd like to do it, but that's kind of the way you do it. You start small and you try and get some some victories that way, and then you build on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at a story here from Chairman Jerome Powell of the Fed, and I know mm-hmm. the president and Jerome Powell don't see eye to eye on everything these days, but yesterday he put out a call to Congress to reduce the federal budget deficit. I think it crossed $1 trillion again the other day for the first time since 2012. We're clearly going in the wrong direction when it comes to that, and there's no way that you can reduce that without cutting something. And
at least slowing the growth rate of the safety net programs. And there are ways of doing that, particularly with regard to healthcare programs. I'm convinced we can have a better Medicare and Medicaid system in a way that will save money over time, and one that is better, with better quality and better access. I think there are healthcare reforms that we could undertake that would really, you know, the seniors have told me that for years when I was in office. Remember the whole thing about waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicare? I mean, they see it from the inside, and there are ways of getting that out of the system. In the 90s, you know, we balanced the budget. Now, it was easier to do it then because the baby boomers had not yet begun to retire, which exerted a lot of additional pressure. But we were able to do it, and I think it can be done. It's not going to happen overnight, okay? But any kind of a plan that put us on the footing to achieve that would really be a great signal, to send to the economy. So, it would be very good to do. I don't think it's going to happen this year in this election year, but it could happen after.
Well, hopefully it's an election issue. I hope people think about the out-of-control spending that's going on and what would happen if somebody like Bernie Sanders got in office and just putting it on steroids. I see it's the end to our country, quite frankly.
Well, experience has gone through Bernie without stopping, as my old friend Congressman Bill Emerson used to say. I mean, he's very authentic about it. But, you know, he's right out of, like, the 30s in terms of his views and his socialism. So the actual experience of the last 80 or 90 years is not going to make much of a difference to him. I like him. I served with him, and I think he's very authentic. And I think that's a big part of his appeal. He believes what he believes. And he's believed it when it was popular and when it wasn't.
Yeah.
And I give him credit for that. But on the other hand, it matters whether you're completely wrong or not. Right?
Thank you.
So,
yeah. It matters that you honeymooned in the Soviet Union and you think it's okay for people to stand in bread lines. I mean,
we tried all this in the 20th century. I mean, nobody can say socialism wasn't tried. Every different form of it and every form of it failed. I mean, that's just the reality and hurt people. I mean, it failed in a way that made a big difference. Now, Bernie is not a tyrant. I mean, he's not going to go in that direction. But socialism in the softer sense has failed too to deliver its promises. And it's almost because it's based on a very false premise, which is that you can manage, you can have some bureaucrats in a central location managing the economy and managing people's choices and do it better than they do it for themselves. And you can't. Okay.
So things can't pay for it.
Well, that's one of the reasons you can't. You're right.
Yeah.
You run out of other people's money, as Margaret Thatcher said.
Well put. Jim, good conversation. Thank you.
Okay, man.
You bet. Senator Jim Talent there joining us this morning, bipartisanpolicycenter.org. Bernie's experience has run through him, and it didn't hold. It's pretty much what he said. It's amazing. Hey, go to the Facebook page, The Mark Cox Show on Facebook. I put a great article up there yesterday. Like the page while you're there. You'll get notifications when we post great stories. It's what you need to know about Bernie Sanders. What you need to know about who he is, and Jim Talent's right. He's been consistent. He's wrong, but he's consistent. And what the things he stands for are frightening. And I've called him an enemy of liberty, and it's absolutely the truth.
Warren fell apart for the same reason that Beto O'Rourke did. Because in place of a message, an actual message that unites people around ideas and policies, she went all in on wokeness. All in. Every public appearance brought out a new facet to her remarkable wokeness.
Are you woke? That's what Tucker's talking about. He says it's ended Elizabeth Warren's run. She has dropped way down in the polls.
Yes.
It'll be interesting. Where do her supporters go? Does it really matter? I don't know. We'll see. Hey, welcome back. We got a big guest right now. We've got Congresswoman Ann Wagner from the 2nd Congressional District on the phone. And I guess a good question for you, Ann, this morning. Are you woke?
Barely awoke. Awoke. Awake. Awoken. Awaken. I'm up and getting ready to head over. We've got some votes this morning and a multitude of meetings. We've got a lot of constituents that are in during late February, all of March. We kind of call it our own March Madness, where a lot of folks come to advocate on behalf of their of the things that they're looking to get done in Congress. So it's a good time. Yeah. A lot of meetings going on.
What about the insanity that is going on in the House right now on the Democratic side of the aisle? You know, again, this Roger Stone thing blows up. Everybody on the left is outraged over nothing. And now you've got Eric Swalwell and others trying to restart impeachment of the president over this silliness.
That would be correct. And so is the Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler and Intel Chairman Adam Schiff. So it is same old, just rinse and repeat. This has been going on for three solid years. I don't know what part of the people of the 2nd District and around the country want us to get back to work and get things done on their behalf. And they continue the investigation after investigation of this this president. But as I said, I think last week proved, and if you looked at that State of the Union, Mark, if you looked at the acquittal, if you look at the, you know, the polling numbers, how strong our economy is, how low our unemployment is, how actual middle class families are booming. It's the lowest rates in half a century in terms of unemployment in our own state of Missouri. And I talked about this at the end of last week or this week. Real median household income is up over 8%, and working families have greater opportunities going forward. So, you know, we need to be tackling things like prescription drug costs. I mean, we supported a plan as Republicans in the House, but the Democrats have one that would just kill innovation and technology. Oh, yeah. And is DOA. I mean, we continue to work on our border. The things I care about, human trafficking and other things, are important. Right now, we're supposed to be getting a budget, and these Democrats won't even come to the table. So it's really too bad.
It really is amazing. But they're doing important things like trying to restart the Equal Rights Amendment, right?
That's today. I took the floor, I guess it was day before yesterday, and spoke on this issue. It is, you know, rarely, Mark, do I agree and quote Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but I did. And today on the floor, there is a resolution that the Democrats are putting forward that seeks to unconstitutionally remove the deadline for ratification of the Equal Rights Amendment. I remember, this was brought forward with 2/3 of Congress in 1972. Prior to Roe v. Wade, and there was a 3-year extension put on it before the 7 years had expired. And in 1983, this was cooked and done. And by then, Mark, 5 states had rescinded their support of the Equal Rights Amendment. So what you had was Nevada and Virginia that were added to this. But the fact of the matter is, what this is all about is taxpayer-funded abortion, period, full stop. They will not take our Hyde protections that have been there for decades and decades. And frankly, as I said, they're unconstitutional. And Ruth Bader Ginsburg said again this week that if they want to do this, they have to start the amendment process, and I quote, over again,
yep,
as the founders intended. So, you know, and they can't do it with a simple majority, which is what they will do today. So,
well, I appreciate you pointing that out. We're talking to Congresswoman Ann Wagner, and let's talk about paid family leave. You and I have differed on this a little bit over the past 1.5 years. I know you and Senator Rubio had versions of a plan. The president brought it up again, though, at his State of the Union address. Why do you think this is a good idea?
Well, I'll tell you, this tight work market, and employers are really looking for ways to participate in supporting some of the needed requirements and things that help working families out there, whether it's paid family leave. By the way, my plan and a couple of the other plans coming out of education and workforce and ways and means do not require any kind of taxpayer investment, or they don't impose business mandates. These are voluntary options that help working families, like my Investing Your Family's Future Act, which we dropped just yesterday, that will allow child care expenses to be counted for the purpose of an employer match within kind of the and you know a lot of this financial services stuff,
sure.
But it would be included in their defined contribution plan, such as their 401k, meaning that an employer could treat child care payments that a young family is making as an elective deferral for purposes of the matching contributions. Again, completely voluntary, but, when you've got the average annual cost of infant care in Missouri at over $10,000, and for a four-year-old, it's over $7,000, a lot of these families can't put in their 401k money, and they're missing on their match. So employers will have the option of helping out, especially in this tight workforce where they're looking for kind of family-friendly policies, whether it be paid family leave, whether it be and there are multiple plans out there where people are taking either an advance on their tax credits, child tax credits, that's one that's out there. There's one that has an advance on the Social Security that you have already paid into the system that does not touch the trust fund, that does not affect current Social Security beneficiaries and retirees. There are multiple plans out there that you don't have to make taxpayers carry the load, and you don't have to put business mandates out there.
Yeah,
for these kinds of things.
That's my concern is mandating it to businesses. But if somebody's in their 20s, can you really say they've already paid for whatever Social Security money they'd be taking back out to pay for this?
Yeah, they have to have worked so many quarters, and that is absolutely a requirement. And they have to have worked so many consecutive quarters. And it's really no different in terms of cost or expense of Social Security Administration than some of the work that they're doing currently on disability referrals and things of this nature. So we're just looking for ways for employers and for young families to stay in the workplace. If they don't stay in the workplace, if they don't go back to work, keep their jobs, they end up on taxpayer assistance. And that is a fact. If they can't have some sort of income, some kind of support coming in through a paid family leave program, they will end up on the public dole, and that's no good either. And we need to make sure that these options are out there. Again, that does not require new taxpayer investments or business mandates. Those are the kinds of things that are very important, and that I'm hearing from a big suburban district with young people that are working and are juggling the expenses and the concerns of a young family. And whether it's my new legislation that allows child care expenses to be counted for your contribution plans for the 401ks and get a match potentially by your employers, again,
right,
voluntary, or whether it's things like a family leave. These are important things that I think we need to be addressing, especially in this tight, tight workforce.
Well, and again, you mentioned the budget deal, but the president sends out a budget that actually for the first time in years would reduce the deficit, and it's dead on arrival in Congress. How do we ever even begin to reduce the amount of money we spend in this country, Ann? I just don't know where we start.
I have a very strong record of opposing government waste. I ran as a budget mom back in 2012. And I'll tell you, Mark, one of the very first votes that I ever took was in Congress as a brand new freshman, was no budget, no pay, because the Congress had not been passing any budgets. And right now, The Democrats did not pass a budget last year. They have no plan to pass a budget this year. The number one thing that Congress is required to do constitutionally, given our power of the purse, is to produce a budget.
Right.
And the president's, and they have not. They have not. I think we need to go back. No budget, no pay.
That's a great idea.
You've got to have a plan that balances the budget, as we have done in the past. The president's plan does that over time. And I think we need to go back to no budget, no pay. And I'll tell you what, you were talking about the presidential race. If Bernie Sanders has his nomination and ascends, we're going to watch this budget deficit and debt, multiply it by 10 or 20.
Sure.
It's just a blank check for free stuff for everyone. It's been very interesting to watch.
Yeah, it's insane. And keep up the good fight. We appreciate having you on. Thank you.
We cannot continue to have the same one-size-fits-all rhetoric. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So when I got into office, people elected me to reform a system that is not just broken, it needs to be rebuilt.
Well, I think you just heard the definition of insanity from the greatest example of it. That is Kim Gardner, the St. Louis Circuit Attorney, giving an exclusive interview to one of our sister stations. I'm going to play you some clips from that just so you can enjoy them like I have been enjoying them this morning since we got our hands on them. And you have an idea of what's really going on in the fight against justice in the city of St. Louis. We'll get to it here at about 8:10. Stay tuned for that.
Get more at 971talk.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.